Albert coming into the Ville like that. He had to know Kirkland would know you people chilled Liberty.
Means Kirkland has more up his sleeve than an arm, Jack. He figures on taking control of the group.
Where do Albert fit in?
Gotta ask him.
Jack turned his attention back to the prisoner.
Why did you follow us?
Kirkland wanted you chilled. You turned up with the plague. Your bodies would be proof they needed him. But that wasn't my idea. I was just following orders.
And that made sense to Jack. Without wasted effort, he slashed the man's throat.
Hi, Dean. Let's ride.
Ryan felt a little self-conscious in the clothes Aunt Mame had sent up by way of one of the maids. The pants were neatly pressed, of thinner material than he would have ever cared to wear, and the shirt had belled sleeves and a ruffled collar that looked effeminate. The short-waisted jacket revealed the fuchsia cummerbund, and the sleeves of the jacket ended above the puffy sleeves of the shirt.
You look good, lover.
I feel triple stoop. That's an ace on the line. These aren't a man's clothes.
Christy slipped her arm through his as they descended the stairs down into the hotel's main room. One of the young maids led the way.
I think you look fine.
Not me, but you look beautiful.
Christy's white evening gown showed off her tall, shapely figure to perfection, setting off the liquid fire of her hair. Her face was clean, made over with a light application of cosmetics that had been provided with the clothing that had been delivered to the room only moments earlier. She'd even shed her beloved cowboy boots to put on the fancy high-heeled shoes that accompanied the dress. The hotel was lit by lanterns. Sconces along the wall held them every few feet, beating back the shadows that threatened to fill the building from outside. The windows on two sides of the room offered two huge views of the starry sky and quiet glimpses of Hazard. Ryan was surprised at how big the building was. From the outside, he'd known it was huge compared to existing structures he'd been in that hadn't been left over completely after the nuke cost. But obvious care had been spent in restoring the decor.
Isn't it beautiful, lover?
Christy paused after they had entered another room. She ran her hand along a grandfather clock. The hands showed that it was 19 minutes past 8.
Yeah.
There were some things that had been salvaged from before the nuke cost that made him really curious about how life had been lived in those times. The grandfather clock was one. He knew from experience that the people living at that time had access to computers that could be programmed to respond to voice commands and give the time out loud. Yet an object like the grandfather clock had obviously been kept, even though it was obsolete. He reached out to stroke the cherrywood finish with his fingertips. The maid waited just inside the doorway ahead of them. Lanterns hung on the wall behind her, throwing out a yellow elongated sphere. She crossed her hands in front of her, ducking her head. Still, she regarded Ryan with what looked like thinly veiled hostility. Ryan returned the woman's gaze. Despite the clothing that had been sent up, he still wore the Sig Sauer and its leather on his hip. The Ponga was sheathed on his opposite hip, ready for instant access.
Aunt Mame, may I present Mr. Ryan Cawdor and Miss Christy Roth?
Ryan glanced at Christy, raising his eyebrow. The Titian-haired woman shook her head slightly, indicating that her muti senses could pick up no veiled threat of danger. Ryan took the lead into the room anyway, protective of his lover.
Relax, Mr. Cawdor. I assure you there's no reason to be afraid here. In the rest of the Ville, perhaps, but not here.
The speaker sat at the end of a rectangular dinner table. Black hair was piled atop a pale oval face that looked only slightly more healthy than a corpse's. If she hadn't been sitting in a wheelchair, Ryan judged that the woman would be tall, perhaps as tall as himself. She wore a jade green dress that crisscrossed her chest. A white eye patch covered her left eye.
I would get up to greet you, but I'm somewhat incapacitated these days. Please seat yourselves.
Ryan pulled a chair out for Christy, taking a moment to run his hand under the table's edge to make sure nothing was waiting underneath that would do them harm. Aunt Mame picked up a long, tall wine glass in her right hand. The maid poured from a dark blue bottle. The shawl draped across her narrow shoulders hid Aunt Mame's other arm from sight.
You'll find the wine is an excellent vintage.
The maid came to Ryan's end of the table and poured drinks. Ryan picked his up. Christy shook her head, letting him know that she sensed nothing wrong.
Oh, excuse me, but it's been a long time since I found myself so amused.
Maybe you'd care to explain what you found so funny.
What I find so amusing is that you would believe you have anything to fear from me, yet you accepted Kirkland's offer to enter this ville.
Kind of short on choices at the time.
So you chose death or imprisonment over taking your chances elsewhere?
Maybe you want to spit out what you're trying to say.
I guess Kirkland hasn't told you that you're prisoners here.
No.
And I take it you didn't know about the plague before you walked into the ville.
Maybe you should start with the plague.
Kirkland's plague. In a moment.
The maid came around the table, unveiling the food covering the surface. Vegetables were cut in beautiful shapes, looking delicate and delicious in their dishes.
Ah. You don't have to worry that you're receiving better fare than your friends. I'm having them served out of the same kitchen. Everything that is offered to you here tonight is also being offered to them.
The maid bent low, whispering something to her mistress.
I'm told only one of your party remains within the hotel.
That's right.
Ah, that's a pity, because not all of this food will maintain proper consistency for long.
We've learned not to be picky eaters. If it's edible or even healthy enough, they'll eat.
Well, still, I'll not have guests in my establishment dine on anything less than the best, even if they insist on keeping strange hours.
Aunt Mame turned to the maid.
Please inform the cooks that their services will be needed a while longer.
The maid nodded, but remained where she stood. Aunt Mame glowered at her.
Don't be difficult, you bitch. Go see to what I've asked you to do.
Yes, ma'am, but they won't like
that. Nothing.
Aunt Mame swiveled her head back at Ryan and gave a sweet smile.
I shall be quite safe here under Mr. Carter's watchful eye. I think we share a singular view on the world.
The maid left reluctantly, her cheeks coloring with emotion. Mame lifted her wine glass.
A toast, then, before we begin this charming meal. To your health. May you keep it.
Ryan stared at the woman for a moment, then lifted his own glass.
Tell me about the plague. How's it spread?
Actually, I don't believe there is a plague. I think Kirkland occasionally chooses to infect some of the people in the ville. Usually it's only people that try to escape hazard.
He doesn't want them to leave?
If they did, who would he rule?
If you think the plague is false, why don't you leave?
My handicaps are quite severe.
Maybe you're in this with Kirkland.
Kirkland and I haven't seen eye to eye in a long time. Although it seems that eye to eye is the only way I see these days. However, just so you'll know, rest assured that in my dealings with Kirkland...
She shifted so the shawl fell away from her left side, shoving the stub of her left arm, the sleeve pinned up, through the material.
I have found the fucker quite disarming.
Duck prowled through the stacks of books, carrying a lantern. He was drawn by the titles and covers. Nearly every branch of science that he'd ever heard of was represented somewhere in the collection. Albert, Cobb, and two of the others sat around a small oval table in the center of the room.
I got no time for you to be looking through the books.
Duck ignored Cobb. He found a section that held all of George Orwell's books. Tenderly, he took down a slim hardcover edition of 1984.
Doc!
If you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever. So true, so true. By the three Kennedys, may you never have known how truly you spake the future.
Albert crossed the room, stepping into the aisle and into the swell of light that emanated from the lantern.
Doc, tell me how you came to hazard.
Doc automatically put the book back on the shelf. Despite his best efforts, he felt his mind wandering, crashing through the decades, through all the information that was so mixed up in his head.
Why, that's easy, dear friend. I came through the hole with Alice. No, it was Emily. No, that's wrong. Dear sweet Emily couldn't come with me this time. Not this time, nor any other.
Ah, leave the old bastard alone. He's fucking crazy.
And you, sir, are an ignoramus and a bounder.
Glad to have you back among us, Doc. Now come on over here and let's talk.
Doc paused a moment, taking up an armload of books. He used his cane across the bottom of them to brace them while he carried them. Seated at the table, Doc placed the lantern beside him, then began going through the books.
How did you get here, Doc?
Cobb reached into one of the shelves and brought out a jug.
My word. But do you know the meaning of subtlety when it comes to home brew?
Listen, old man, I don't have time to get it perfect. Answer Albert's question about how you got here.
Why, we walked, of course.
You and your friends?
My companions and I, yes.
And you never heard of the plague before?
No.
Somehow that doesn't sound right. You got to admit that.
Have you ever heard of Ralph Waldo Emerson?
No.
Yet you stand in a room filled with books. I even saw some of Emerson's works on your shelves. I find that it does not sound right that you have never embraced the man's writing.
What's that got to do with...
Exactly my point. That I have not heard of the plague ere now simply means that neither I nor my companions have heard of the plague. What you actually want to know is a way out of your present problem, and with that I may be of some pedestrian help, assuming that my companions are amenable.
That, the old man knew, would depend on whether Ryan thought he could get them out of the Ville without raising an army to do it, and if a way could be found around the plague. Ryan tore one of the fancy biscuits in two.
Kirkland cut off your arm?
That isn't all.
Aunt Mame waved to the maid, who had returned and stood in the shadows.
Yes, I'm afraid his vengeance was quite complete.
Reluctantly, the maid rolled the wheelchair back. Aunt Mame pulled back the blanket across her legs and revealed that she only had one of those as well. The other was perfect and slender, her foot encased in a jade green slipper.
The animal took her arm, her leg, her breast, her eye, her ear.
That's enough, Jocelyn.
You were so beautiful.
I still am.
You still are.
Thank you. I'm not told that by enough men these days. I beg your indulgence, Christy.
Of course. What Ryan and I have together has survived a lot. Neither of us is afraid to speak his or her mind.
More people should be able to conduct their lives in such a fashion. Push me forward, please, Jocelyn. I apologize for inconveniencing your meal. I know discussion of such matters is not good for the palate.
The meal's good. I don't see how anything short of getting chilled is going to interfere with that.
I'll pass your kind words on to the cooks.
Cutting things down to the bone here. I suppose there's a reason why you asked us here and not the rest of our people.
Of course.
I'd like to know what that is.
You're a direct man, Ryan Carter.
I had a friend who had a way of looking at life. Over, under, or around. That was his philosophy, and it stood him in good stead.
And where's his friend now?
Chilled, maybe. Maybe getting laid and planning his next big trade. But let's cut back to the chase here.
All right. I want you to kill Kirkland.
Couple things I see wrong with that. Chief among them is the possibility of the plague chilling us right after we chill him.
That's only if you believe the plague is really a plague.
Why did Kirkland do this to you?
I was lucky this was all he did, in a sense. He could have taken both of everything he has before. Kirkland worked for a baron farther east. I've even heard rumors that he spent time in New York. I don't know the truth of it. I first met him in a caravan headed west through the Shens. That's how I heard about you, Ryan Carter. You've been gone for some years, and no one had heard of you recently. Kirkland had a lot of jack. I didn't. So I got close to him, made myself available. I hadn't planned on a relationship with him. I don't really care for a man's sexual attentions. But I do know what a woman's face and figure can do to the right kind of wrong man. I heard about how he was going to start up a ville of his own. That ville became Hazard. Seeing an opportunity for myself, I offered my services as a hosteler. He put me into business here for a percentage of everything I made. I thought that was fair, since it was his investment capital we were working with. I've managed a few places before and even ran card games.
Kirkland expected something more, though, didn't he?
He made no bones about it. On the way over, he tried to be more forceful about our relationship, but the Wagmaster didn't put up with behavior like that. And the opportunities were few.
That changed when you hit Hazard.
Yes.
You could have kept on going.
Easy for you to say, sitting there in that chair. But I see you found your way to Hazard and stopped as well. At the time, I felt that I couldn't go on any farther. The plan was to stay here in Hazard for a time, get some Jack set back, then move on.
Only it didn't work out that way. That fucking animal came in here on her, made sure none of us was around to help defend her. By the time we got back, it was too late.
Aunt Mame's finger circled around her glass absently. Her smile was crooked, distant, and totally without mirth.
Kirkland trapped me in my office and made his intentions known. I couldn't fight him. And if I did, I knew I'd have to chill him quick if I was able. So I gave in and offered oral sex. He liked the idea. Said it would be a good prelude to the festivities he had planned. So I did, hoping that he was all bluff and that he wouldn't be able to get it up a second time. Soon as he was finished with my mouth, he turned me over on my desk and started hauling my skirt up.
Jocelyn stepped up behind her, holding her shoulders.
I was desperate that he not see me. I knocked the lantern from the desk and it caught fire on the rug. The rest of the room was concrete blocks at that time, so the kerosene only burned the carpet. Laid flat across the desk, I was brutally sodomized. Kirkland told me he was saving the best for last. When he finished that time, he flipped me over. I kept a straight razor strapped to my thigh those days. I tried to get my razor, but he knocked it away. Then he saw my male member staring back up at him instead of what he was expecting.
Ryan had no comment for that. He glanced briefly at Christy while Jocelyn tried to comfort Aunt Mame.
You see, I was stuck. Do you know what it's like to be trapped in a body, in a gender, that you know can't be your own?
No.
I found a healer back east who had access to some pre-doc meds. I talked him into going this far with me.
She waved her hand at her chest.
But he didn't have the skill to make the final changes. I heard there was an enclave out in the west somewhere along the Pacific that still handled operations like this. Have you ever heard of such a thing?
No.
It would be funny, don't you think, that I came out all this way and endured what I've endured only to find that I was chasing a lie?
I wouldn't think so.
Kirkland cut her in a fit of rage, knocked her out and took her back to his office. He cut off her arm and her leg, then her ear and her breast, took out her eye, and then he cut off her penis. He spent weeks taking care of her, making sure she was going to live, before he returned her to us.
You see, I was still the best hosteler he could put into this place. He couldn't take that from me, and he would have only been hurting himself by trying to put someone else in here. But I have to wonder how many days I've got left now that Kirkland's tightened his control over Hazard. Not many people come to the hotel these days.
Well, I'm here to tell you that you still set a fine table.
Thank you. Your lover is a man, Miss Roth, so he's probably already got his mind made up as to how he's going to handle the situation with Kirkland. But I'd like you to persuade him, if you can, to kill this monster before you quit this place.
Ryan usually can't be talked into anything.
Oh, please try. Strangely, one of the things that hurts me the most is the fact that Kirkland denies everything that happened that night. When I tried to tell the original settlers in this village all those years ago what happened to me, he stated that his vengeance was only an example, to let them know what would happen to anyone who tried to steal from him, that if they weren't willing to give him his half, he'd take his half out of them. He denied that he'd ever desired me or even taken advantage of me.
He's a bastard monster.
I apologize for interrupting such a good meal with my tale of woe. And now I find myself feeling inadequate for any other conversation.
Aunt Mame waved at Jocelyn.
If you'll excuse me, I think I'll turn in for the evening.
Of course.
Do think about what I said, Mr. Carter. I hadn't cheated Kirkland out of any of his proceeds before the night that he ruined me, but I've cheated him out of plenty since. I've got a lot of Jack put back for a rainy day. A large chunk of that is yours, if you chill Kirkland.
Jocelyn turned the wheelchair and pushed Aunt Mame away. Ryan picked up a knife and cut a thick slab of cherry pie sitting in the middle of the table.
You want a piece?
I'm afraid I've lost my appetite, lover.
If you've got the space, eat. We're not staying in this villa one crontic longer than we have to. Don't know when we'll have it so good again.
So where do we go?
Back to the redoubt.